Savings, thanking those folks. Let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
99.5 FM, WBAI, New York.
Good morning and welcome to Animal Matters on WBAI 99.5 FM New York and also streaming live at WBAI.org this Sunday, November 23rd. I'm your host, Jeff Simmons. I'm thrilled to be with you again for another episode of WBAI's new show, well, relatively new, dedicated to animals, our pets, wildlife that we share this planet with, and the people who are fighting to make their lives better. Now, this again is not just a show about cute animals. It's about diving into the big picture, the policies shaping animal welfare, incredible rescue efforts that are happening every day, and how all of us can be better stewards, better caretakers for the animals in our lives. It isn't just about informing, it's about connection. It's about connecting. This is a hub for animal lovers everywhere where you can learn and share your own stories, which we hope you'll do in the second half of today's show, and join us in advocating for change. So whether it's tackling issues like pet adoption or celebrating the organizations that are rehoming and rehabilitating animals, we are here to inspire action. Okay, this morning, I'm extremely happy to welcome someone who many New Yorkers already may remember from their television screens, someone who brings a journalist's curiosity and a deep love for community and animals to everything she does. I'm talking about Erin Clark, who spent more than a dozen years as a TV news reporter, including at Spectrum News New York One, and as well as she covered the Bronx, by the way, and at the NBC affiliate in Pittsburgh. She's a graduate of the University of Pittsburgh and Syracuse University's Newhouse School, and she does stay very, very busy off the air. She serves on the boards of the Kingsbridge Heights Community Center and the Van Cortlandt Park Alliance, and she's a member of Eta Omega Omega, the Bronx chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority. I've been fortunate to work with Erin for some time now in our full-time job supporting nonprofits in the greater metropolitan area. And of course, the most important part of her resume, she lives in the Bronx with her dog, Peggy. Erin, welcome to Animal Matters. I'm so glad to have you with us as a guest host today.
Hey, Jeff. Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here on Animal Matters this morning.
Okay, we have to start talking about Peggy before we get to you. How did Peggy come into your life? Because I want our listeners to know her story.
Yeah, of course. I was so blessed to have Peggy come into my life about 4 years it is now. A friend of a friend was having a really big life change. He and his wife and their newborn were moving to Hawaii, and they wanted to take Peggy with them, but then they started to think that it would just be too much for her. And so our mutual friend put out a call. He didn't even know that I was interested in having a dog, and I went to visit Peggy, and the rest is history. It was love at first sight, and she's been with me ever since.
Oh, what kind of a dog is Peggy? And was love at first sight on your side? Was it love at first sight on her side too?
Oh, it was definitely love at first sight on Peggy's side. I went to have a doggy interview with her and her former owner, and I thought that it might be, you know, maybe a week or 2 weeks before I would find out, because he was probably interviewing other folks. And a day later, he reached out to me and said that he could see the connection that Peggy and I had, and he just wanted to give her to me. So it was definitely love at first sight. Peggy was meant for me. And she is what many people would refer to as a pit bull. I understand that that is an umbrella term. So she's a terrier of some sort. But I gave Peggy one of those doggy DNA tests, and it says that she is 100% American Pit Bull Terrier. But I question that, because she has some features that don't look like the typical pit bull that you see walking down New York City streets.
Wow. You know, and I did one of those DNA tests a while ago too, and it showed I was somehow distantly related to a famous celebrity, but we're not going to mention her name right now. We'll save that for another episode. We're going to get into the news in just a moment, but one other question before we dive into some of the latest news in the last week that you and I were interested in telling our listeners about. Did you grow up with pets?
I grew up with fish as pets. I never had a dog nor a cat, but it was just something that I had always thought about. And when I came back to New York after living in Pittsburgh, I thought to myself, wouldn't that be a great addition to my life to bring a dog or a cat into my life? And so, like I said, I was blessed to have Peggy, and I haven't looked back.
I grew up with fish, hamsters, ducks. I'm trying to think what else. Well, a cat for a while, dogs. We lived on a lake in northern New Jersey, had a big backyard, and there were lots of other wildlife that we'd often experience. We started with two bunnies. The mistake was one male, one female, and you can imagine how many bunnies we then had, Aaron. So let's just talk about some stories in the news before we get to our guest, who is with us. But we just want to bring you some news, and we'll save some of the other stories, two of the stories, for later on in the show. Aaron, there was one that you pointed out to me earlier this week that I'd love for you to start with.
Yeah, this is a heartbreaking story, but also heartwarming. It's out of Atlanta this past week, where local animal shelters are facing one of the worst overcrowding surges they've seen in years. Intake numbers are skyrocketing, adoptions have slowed, and shelters are running out of space, forcing some to make urgent pleas to the public to help save dogs at risk. The crisis has been especially severe at Fulton County Animal Services. Staff say they're taking in far more dogs than they can safely house, many arriving scared, injured, or surrendered by families who can no longer afford their care. At one point recently, the shelter was caring for more than 350 dogs, far beyond its intended capacity. But the community responded after officials warned that they were out of kennel space and that dogs could be in danger of euthanasia simply because there was nowhere to put them. Atlanta residents stepped up in force. In a matter of days, families arrived to foster and adopt, creating a wave of support the staff called a lifesaver. One family walked in to adopt a dog named Dallas and left with five more. They
Wow.
say they simply couldn't stand the idea of leaving the others behind. Another couple went in planning to foster one dog and ended up taking home a pair of bonded siblings so that they wouldn't be separated. That's beautiful. And the shelter workers, they say this is exactly the kind of action that keeps animals alive during overcrowding emergencies. Even short-term fostering, just a week or two can open critical space and buy time for another dog to find its future home. So, as we've told you on the show before, when highlighting the national shelter crisis, the root causes really remain the same: rising housing costs, inflation, and a post-pandemic wave of pet surrenders that are pushing shelters to the brink. Still, amid the strain, the outpouring of compassion has given staff hope and saved a whole lot of four-legged lives. As one shelter worker put it, every kennel that empties is a second chance.
And given that story, and we're talking about the shelter crisis across the country, we've done this before. Some good news. This past week, our governor, Kathy Hochul, announced $10 million in new funding to support critical improvements at animal shelters across the state. This is part of the state's Companion Animal Capital Fund. It's going to help shelters and rescues and humane societies undertake important construction, renovation, and expansion projects so that can help them improve the care and welfare of dogs and cats that are waiting for their forever homes. Of that total amount of 10 million, 1 million specifically is set aside for shelter organizations that are not contracted with municipalities. Now, since this program launched in 2017, it invested close about $48 million in 161 projects statewide, and that basically allowed it to enhance everything from kennel conditions to medical facilities. The governor emphasized the vital role that these shelters are playing in providing safe havens for companion animals and highlighted how this funding will help them offer better care and hopefully, inevitably, increase adoption rates. Now, by the way, applications are open. Applications for this latest round are due by the end of January, this coming January 30th, 2026. So definitely go to the governor's website at governor.ny.gov. /news. You'll be able to see the press release. And if you're interested, this is somewhere where you should apply. So we're going to save two of the other news stories for later on in the show. But I just wanted to bring up a topic that hits very close to home for so many people. One we don't always talk about openly, but we really should. We spend a lot of time in the show celebrating the joy and companionship that animals bring into our lives. But when these relationships change, when couples separate, or when families face tough transitions, there's another reality that can be really incredibly painful: pet custody battles. And it is a touchy subject for good reason. Our pets are not property to us, they're family. Yet when disputes arise, the law doesn't always reflect the emotional bonds that we build or the routines and care that our animals depend on. And figuring out who keeps the pet, how decisions get made, what the courts actually consider can be confusing, stressful, and unfortunately, emotionally draining. So today, we want to offer something special, guidance. We're going to break down what pet custody really involves, the do's and don'ts when emotions are high, and how to make choices that keep your animal's well-informed, well-being front and center. And that means everything from how the courts are starting to weigh the, quote, best interest of the pet to the kinds of agreements that couples can put in place before a conflict ever begins. Because protecting the animals we love also means preparing for moments we hope never happen.
So some of the key issues that can come up: how New Yorkers and other states now judge to consider the best interest or best for all concerned standard for companion animals, blending ideas from child custody law with property law. The difference between married couples who usually resolve pet issues in divorce in Supreme Court and unmarried partners who may need separate civil actions or agreements because they really can't rely on the same family court framework. And practical planning, written pet NUPs or co-ownership agreements, and detailed pet custody plans that set out where the animal lives, who pays what, and what happens if someone moves. To help us sort all of this out, the law, the emotions, and the practical steps you can take to protect your animals, we're joined by New York divorce and family law attorney Daniel Clement. Daniel has more than 35 years of experience guiding clients through divorces and family disputes, and he's known for a straightforward, pragmatic approach that helps people make sound decisions in very tense moments. Clients turn to him for personal attention, street smarts, and strong advocacy in high stakes matters. And he's been recognized as a super lawyer for his work in this field. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us today on Animal Matters.
Good morning, and thanks for having me. That's a very nice introduction.
Well, it's all about you, right? To start at the basics, when couples divorce in New York, how does the law technically treat a dog or a cat? As property, as a family member, or something in between?
It's kind of a hybrid, and it's something that's, you know, evolving. Historically, pets were always treated like property, just like a table or a chair or a car. But the courts have evolved in their view. They don't treat them like children, which the standard is always for children is what's the best interest of children. So it's not that standard. Of course, have evolved and have increasingly recognized that the pets are unique in terms of their family role and the emotional significance they hold for their owners. So now there are really two standards, and it's really based upon the party's marital status.
Okay, so New York now tells courts to look at the best interests of the companion animal in a divorce. What does that mean in practice? And what kinds of facts actually move a judge in one direction or another?
Well, what the courts are instructed to do is look at a holistic set of factors that include the extent to which each party has been involved in the pet's daily care, such as feeding, walking, grooming, going to the vet. That's one factor. Another factor would be the emotional relationship between the party, each party, and the pet. Something that would show how affected, how their level of affection, how close they are aligned.
So it's really the relationship that each individual partner
Right.
has.
And then looking post-divorce, you would be looking at the stability of each party's living arrangement post-divorce, whether they're going to be living in a spacious home with a big backyard or close to a park, or they're going to be living in a cramped studio, whether they're going to be left alone all day, whether the pet's going to be left alone all day, or whether someone's going to be there to, working from home, or will have a, be going to doggy daycare.
The best interests of the pet.
Also, why are the parties' financial abilities? Pets are not inexpensive. A pet owner will know. You go to a vet, it's going to cost you at least $500.
Oh, yeah, we all know if we're pet owners.
So it's what are the financial means of the parties? Can they support the animal? Can they buy the food? Can they get the the medications, the weekly, the monthly tick worm and heartworm, tick and heartworm preventatives, and so on and so forth. And then, finally, another factor could be, any history of domestic violence, which would certainly impact on the pet's the welfare. Now, none of these factors by themselves are determinative. So, but the court's required to do is look at the totality of the circumstances to determine really what is the pet's best interest.
And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Animal Matters on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York. And we're also streaming live at WBAI.org. I'm Jeff Simmons, your host, joined by guest host Aaron Clark. We're talking with Daniel Clement about how to navigate custody issues over pets. If you'd like to call in with a question, the phone lines are open, 212-209-2877. I'm going to repeat that, 212-209-2877. Daniel, how different is the situation for unmarried partners or domestic partners who split up but share a pet versus if it is a married couple?
Well, it's a different standard. It's the standard for unmarried couples is the best for all concerned, and that's a standard that really looks at not just the animal but the parties as well. So, the court will also be looking at, the emotional bond between the pet and the family, but also the benefit that each party derives from having the pet. Again, the each party's ability to meet the physical and emotional needs. But it's looking not just at the animal, it's looking at what the party's relationship as well.
So, Daniel, can people create enforceable agreements about cu pet custody, like something like I mentioned earlier, a pet nup? Are those actually real?
Yeah, those are very real. It's probably a really good idea. I'm a strong proponent of doing a prenup anyway. But if you are entering a relationship, if you have it, the if you're entering a relationship and you already have the animal, have an agreement saying, hey, if this doesn't work out, the dog or the cat is mine. You can do that after you get the animal as well. But it is really a good idea to prevent having to hire someone like me, after the fact, when you're fighting over the animal, and you have to make that Solomon-like decision of where who gets the dog or cat.
You said the dog or cat is mine. So, do courts ever order shared custody or visitation with pets, or is it usually an all or nothing decision?
It's generally winner take all. I've seen a few decisions where, at least on an interim basis, the courts have said, we'll work out some kind of a parenting schedule or a visiting schedule, whatever you want to call it. But it really is winner take all. So the stakes are kind of high, and it makes some sense because, in the child custody area, there are a lot of enforcement issues after the fact. Where a mother is not letting a father see the child, or a child's father saying, I'm being deprived of seeing the child. Well, you multiply that by how many pet owners there are with interim pet, with pet agreements or pet visitation orders. It would probably open the floodgates. So I think there's a real practical reason for that, but generally it's winner take all.
I mean, that brings up the next question, really. Perfect segue into it. If a listener is thinking of separating and is worried about losing their animal, are there practical steps that they should be taking right now in terms of documentation, daily care, really just communicating with their partner?
Yeah, well, the answer, I think we hit it before, is obviously have some kind of an agreement, saying that, the pet cage, here comes my dog, who's going to get the animal if, in the event of a breakup. But the answer is really kind of self-proving, is who is the better parent. Just be engaged. Obviously, if you bought the dog, have your name on the registration, the title. Take the dog to the vet, make yourself known when you go to the vet. Walk the dog, be engaged. All the things you would do just because you do love your dog. That's all you can really do.
So, Daniel, I want to just jump in here because this can be a very emotional experience for people, and how do you help clients balance that emotional reality with the legal and financial realities of this divorce or breakup?
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time?
Yeah, these experiences can be very, very emotional. And so for many people, they're just, their actions may be based clearly on their emotion, but there's then the legal and financial realities when they're going through a divorce or breakup. I don't know if you can reflect on a specific experience you had with the client without divulging anything personal, private, but how do you help them navigate that? Because, I could imagine that if I were going through this, for me, it's all or nothing. I would want the dogs. But really, I'd have to step back and think of the legal issues and the real and all the other factors. So I just, I'd
Yeah,
love to
I mean,
just.
look, that's a real personal decision, obviously, and quite frankly, a financial one, because to go to court is not an inexpensive process. So you have to really be committed. Now, that may be a way of fleshing out someone who's really not committed, because very often, particularly in divorces, well, actually in both for unmarried and married couples, someone will say, I want the dog, because and really doing it as a point of leverage. I really want the car, but I want the dog because you want the dog. Maybe you'll give me the car, or some additional money. People can be very manipulative like that. So, sometimes the dog is not the dog; it's something else. But unfortunately, you have to go through the entire process to flesh that out. But you have to make a decision. It's a financial decision, an emotional decision, whether you really want to pursue this, and to what degree.
Are you seeing more states take this issue on, or where does New York stand compared with other states when it comes to these issues? I'm curious. I'm always seeing proposed legislation on various matters, so I'm just curious if there is a movement to make this process easier, or New York is more restrictive or less restrictive than other states when it comes to these pet custody
I
battles.
really, to be honest, I'm not following the other states, but I have to think, that New York is probably one of the leading states on this. This is, as I said, this has been a bit of an evolution, going from where pets are, property, to, okay, let's really figure out what's the best interest of the dog and cat.
Oh, and by
Well,
the way, oh, I just want to remind people, by the way. Sorry, Aaron. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877, if you've got a question for Daniel Clement. Go ahead, Aaron. I'm sorry.
that's not a problem at all. Daniel, I wanted to take you back a second to talking about the disputes and when this really becomes a legal issue. Are there particular red flags like abuse, neglect, controlling behavior that you think may tip the scales strongly in favor of one person or another when judges are deciding?
Yeah, I mean, look, certainly abuse would be the number one, and also that's very indicative of domestic violence as well. But so certainly, any evidence of domestic violence, any domestic abuse would certainly tip the scale. Another factor, as I said, would be kind of like that blackmail. You can have the dog, but I want, $10,000. That would also be a red flag. And someone who may say, we have two dogs. Let's split them. You take one and I'll take one. That's probably not someone who's really looking out for the best interests of the animals either. And I'm sure in most cases, the animals are bonded and want to stay together. So severing them would be probably not in their best interests.
And the final question I have for you, Daniel, to pretty much sum all of this up, after considering all the things that we've talked about today, is it a good idea to get a pet as maybe like a test before you have kids or something like that? You know, we hear so often that folks say, yeah, we're gonna get a pet first and try it out, or a couple decides it's a cute thing to do to get a pet. What's your advice?
That's probably, it's good and bad. Speaking both as a father, and as a pet owner, I've heard disaster stories where they have the dog and then that comes baby, and the dog gets jealous, and then you have all sorts of problems and you have to rehome it. But that said, I think it will go into, be a forebear of how each of you will probably care for a child, how nurturing and how loving you could be, how you'll each handle the child. So it may be a good starting point.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much for joining us. But before we let you go, I just want you to let our listeners know where they can learn more about you and the work that you do.
Sure. Well, my offices are in Manhattan at Madison Avenue and 30th Street, 112 Madison Avenue, and my email, my website is www.clementlaw.com, clementlaw.com.
Once again, Daniel Clement, thank you so much for joining us today on Animal Matters. You have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You know, Aaron, I've never encountered anyone who has been through this. I could just imagine how difficult it can be. But I also think of like even roommates, for instance, Aaron. You know, if two roommates get a dog together and then the roommates, separate, what happens there?
Yeah, I mean, there are just so many things to think about, to consider when you're getting a pet. They really aren't property. They really are your family.
So I know we've got about 2 minutes left before we're going to take a very brief break. But for anyone who's tuned in, we want to let you know the next half hour, we're opening up the phone lines. We'll bring you some more latest news stories, including one about monarch butterflies. I know we talked about this on the show several months ago, back with my earlier co-host who was obsessed with monarch butterflies. And there's a really interesting story that's out there I want to tell you about. Also, we'll bring you up to date. I've got to call up the story on bird flu because Aaron, I'm a little bit of a hypochondriac. So seeing this story that took place out of Washington, I think Washington, D.C., I'll bring it up, is troubling. But another question or two for you quickly, Aaron. Just a little about Peggy. How the heck is Peggy staying so quiet during this show? Because if I'm correct, she's probably sitting right next to you.
She's sitting right next to me, but I'm actually at my dining room table right now. And so to Peggy, sitting at the dining room table means that there is food somewhere near. And so if there is food near, you have my girl's attention all the time.
Well, with Thanksgiving coming up, I'm sure that Peggy is like, "Oh, good, it's going to be a bounty of food this week."
Oh my gosh, it's so hard to keep food away from Peggy. I mean, she's good in the sense that she won't jump on the table to get the food, but she will sit right next to you and give you those puppy dog eyes. And I mean, you have to try with everything in you not to want to give her some table scraps. But yeah, we all know that that's not the best thing to do.
Yes, one of our dogs jumped up onto a chair at a family gathering to get closer to the top of the table. I was like, okay, he knew what to do. He knew where the food was. And we're gonna, we'll talk a little about Thanksgiving because I've got also in the next half hour some really interesting details on something, Erin, you're gonna share and how people can foster a dog just for Thanksgiving, which is
Oh my
really,
gosh.
really a nice approach. I know I was really happy when I saw that this program. We're gonna take a brief break. You are listening to Animal Matters, your show about pets and animals around us here on WBAI 99.5 FM New York, and also streaming live at WBAI.org. I'm Jeff Simmons. My guest host is Erin Clark. We want to hear your thoughts on the issue that we just talked about, but really about anything that's on your mind involving animals or pets today. So give us a call at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Erin and I will be back in just a few minutes. And welcome back to Animal Matters on WBAI 99.5 FM New York, and also streaming live at WBAI.org this Sunday, November 23rd. I'm your host, Jeff Simmons, joined by Aaron Clark as a co-host today, and that was Al Green's Let's Stay Together, sticking with the theme, Stay Together for the Pets. Phone lines are open at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. What's on your mind this morning? Give us a call. We would love to hear from you this Thanksgiving week. Of course, let us know how you handle your pets on Thanksgiving. What special treats do you give them? If you do anything special for them during the holidays, call us at 212-209-2877. We would love to hear from you. Okay, just want to bring up one or two of those news stories we didn't get to earlier. I mentioned the monarch butterflies, and I just want to bring you this update. It's so cool. There is a there was a news story this past week. I believe I read about it in the New York Times. We've covered this in depth about the migration of the monarch butterflies. We devoted an entire episode to the remarkable migration and the growing threats that these butterflies face. Well, researchers now have unveiled a breakthrough that could really reshape what we know about one of nature's greatest journeys. They successfully attached tiny solar-powered tracking sensors to monarch butterflies. They were lightweight enough that they don't interfere with their flight, but powerful enough to follow the butterflies across thousands of miles. I mean, until now, tracking individual monarchs over long distances was nearly impossible. Think about it. Their bodies are extremely delicate, and traditional tracking tags were too heavy or too limited to capture the full migration in real time. I could just imagine what it would be like tracking them. This new sensor changes that. Using an ultra-thin, flexible design, researchers put the device on the butterfly's wing, where it gathers data on sunlight and temperature and flight patterns, and a network of ground sensors then picks up the signal as the monarchs move. Researchers say this technology could transform conservation efforts by identifying exactly where the monarchs rest, refuel, and face the biggest threats. Scientists can better target habit restoration along the migration corridor, which continues, unfortunately, to shrink due to climate change, pesticide use, and loss of vital milkweed. So for a species whose numbers have dropped dramatically in recent decades, precision data like this could be a turning point. One scientist put it like this: you can't protect what you can't track. Aaron?
Well, moving on to another story that we've been following for a while, not as cool as the one that you just told, Jeff, but a few months ago, we addressed this troubling trend, police shootings of dogs, unfortunately, and we explored how civil rights lawsuits are pushing police departments to reform how officers interact with family pets. There's this case that made headlines recently. The city of Sturgeon, Missouri, agreed to pay a $500,000 settlement after a police officer shot and killed a blind and deaf Shih Tzu mix named Teddy in May of last year. Teddy, who weighed only 13 pounds, had slipped out of his owner's fence yard and ended up on a neighbor's property. Because Sturgeon police handle animal control, the neighbor called police for helping return the dog. Body camera footage shows the responding officer trying for several minutes to catch Teddy with an animal control snare pole before giving up and shooting him at close range while the dog was facing away and not threatening anyone. The owner later sued the city and the officer, alleging unconstitutional seizure and that Sturgeon failed to properly train, supervise, and discipline its officers in handling companion animals. Under the settlement, the city and the officer's insurer will pay the $500,000, which animal law advocates say is among the largest payout to date in a case involving the police killing a dog. The case also sparked local backlash and resulted in personnel fallout, with the officer involved departing from the department and criticism of Sturgeon Police's policies and training around non-lethal handling of pets. Animal law groups are highlighting the Sturgeon settlement as a signal that courts and municipalities are beginning to take the killing of companion animals by police more seriously, both as a constitutional issue and as a matter of community trust. Advocates argue that robust training in de-escalation and humane animal handling, along with clear departmental policies, can prevent many of these shootings and reduce legal and financial exposure for cities. Jeff?
Yeah, and what's most troubling about this is that you think of incidents where there are not the body cams and how it becomes the word of law enforcement versus the dog or pet owners. And so, in this case, and in other cases that we had talked about with an attorney a few months ago on this show, those body camera videos really can help put the right perspective on what took place as opposed to just taking the word of a law enforcement officer, Aaron.
Well, back to something that's going to put a smile on your face. We want to tell you about a wonderful opportunity for our listeners in New York City this Thanksgiving. Best Friends Animal Society is inviting you to host a furry house guest for the holiday weekend with their Thanksgiving foster sleepovers. On Wednesday, November 26th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., you can come on in, pick up an adoptable pet at the Best Friends Pet Adoption Center. Excuse me. It's located at 307 West Broadway, right here in Soho. Everything you need, a pet, food, toys, and supplies, is provided at no cost, making it easy to open your home and your heart for the holiday. To sign up or coordinate your pickup time, just head over to bestfriends.org/NYC. Hosting a foster pet for the long weekend is a great way to give animals a safe, loving home to be while enjoying a new companion for the Thanksgiving holiday. And while you're celebrating, remember to keep your pet safe, as we talked about earlier. As tempting as it may be, no table scraps or bones, as those can be harmful. Stick to pet-safe treats and enjoy the seasons together. Helping animals in need is one of the best gifts you can share this time of the year. And you're listening to Animal Matters, your show about pets and the animals around us, here on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York, and streaming live at WBAI. I'm your guest host, Erin Clark, joined by Jeff Simmons, and the phone lines are open for your calls. We want to hear from you. That number is 212-209-2877. One more time, 212-209-2877.
Erin, okay, let's talk about Thanksgiving because I'm glad that you pointed out some of the things that people need to consider about. I feel like my pets would gain so much weight this time of the year because we were cooking so much more. And Thanksgiving, obviously, they love turkey, but we were really, really careful about what we gave them simply because we did not want them to have any bones because that could be cause a serious issue with dogs and bones. What are some of the best practices you've employed around the holidays with Peggy?
Well, I not only around the holidays, but all year long, one of Peggy's meals for the day is cooked food. I have a farmer's market in my neighborhood that is open year round. And so every Sunday, actually, right after this show, Peggy and I are going to walk over to the farmer's market and I pick her up some sweet potato. I usually grab each week from the grocery store some chicken thighs, and then I'll get her some carrots too. And I cut up the sweet potatoes and the carrots, and I make a stew of the three. And so Peggy has her own like Thanksgiving meal, and that makes her feel better. At least I like to think so. She's getting some human food, but it's pet grade human food. There's not a lot of extra seasoning or anything in it. It's just the three ingredients that I mentioned to you and some chicken broth. So that's one of the things that I employ. And maybe I give her a little extra during Thanksgiving and the holiday season.
My dogs were obsessed with pumpkin. They loved pumpkin.
Yeah. A friend recently told me that pumpkin is a good thing to give pets, especially if they're a little sick. So I bought Peggy a can a couple of weeks ago. I was with family for the weekend, and after I came back from that visit, then poor Peggy was a little sick. Thankfully, she's okay now. So I'm thinking that maybe when I wasn't paying attention, someone slipped her something that they shouldn't have. So yeah, I gave Peggy some pumpkin, some canned pumpkin with her food, and in about a day, she was doing better.
So you bring this up about, making a homemade meal for Piggy, and I read a story in the last 24 hours actually, and I tagged it because I wanted to bring it up today if we were talking about what we feed our pets around this time of year. Because apparently there's a study that came out by the Dog Aging Project, Aaron, which basically said that over the last 2 decades, homemade diets have seen a rise in popularity. But the research found that most homemade diets were missing important nutrients that dogs need to lead healthier lives. This was a study that was then published in the American Journal of Veterinary Research. And it, let's see, it assessed the nutritional completeness of more than 1,700 homemade diets and found that only 6% of them had the potential to be nutritionally complete. Really, really interesting because some of the ingredients you mentioned were exactly where I would go with my pets as well. You want to make sure that they're getting fiber, you want to make sure it's balanced. For me, it was really important that they were not eating anything that anything in a large quantity that could upset them. So I would always kind of do a little taste test first and see how it worked out. How have you introduced new foods to Peggy over the years? Do you kind of do a little taste test first, or is she just like all in as soon as she sees like peanut butter or something?
You know, Peggy is a food made motivated dog. I learned that when I first got her. I took her to pet training and we tried with the food, you know, snacks to see if that would get her attention. And then the instructor tried with toys, squeaking toys. And Peggy knew that her mama had the snacks and she did not pay attention to the toy. I tell that story to say that, you know, if I put something down in a bowl, Peggy's gonna go for it. So I do have to introduce things slowly and make sure that I read ingredients and I do a little bit of research before I give it to her because she's gonna eat anything that's put in front of her. But the way I found out about this stew that I'm cooking for Peggy, it was actually on a website of a woman who makes homemade meals for her pets. But exactly what you mentioned, I think about all the time. I wonder if you know, what I'm cooking is a fully balanced meal for Peggy. So she doesn't get the cooked meal twice a day. She does get actual canned or bagged pet food that I buy from the pet store or my vet. So making sure that she's getting a little bit of both, some wet and dry food, and hoping that that is the best thing for her. So far, so good. But you know, Jeff, that brings me to think that maybe we should have a pet nutritionist on the
I
show to
was
talk to us
just
about
thinking, I was just as you're
this.
speaking, I'm like, I wrote down dietitian. I like what you said better, a nutritionist, much better.
Yeah, we don't want to put our pets on
And
diets,
maybe,
not unless they have to.
and
No
maybe that
pet
will,
shaming here.
maybe that'll help, maybe that'll help me as well because I gained a few pounds back. I do want to, because I know we're going to be running out of time shortly, I do want to bring an update to our listeners of something I mentioned before the break that for me being a hypochondriac, these are the type of things that worry me. But you know, it was significantly in the news months and months ago about the rise in bird flu cases across the globe. Well, there was a new strain that was discovered in Washington. A Washington resident who became the first human case of bird flu in the country since February passed away on Friday, according to state health officials. This was an older adult who had underlying conditions, who had been hospitalized since early November with a strain that previously was only reported in animals, but never before in humans. And that person was undergoing treatment for an infection with H5N5 avian influenza, according to the health department. A number of people who were in contact with this person were tested. They did not show any signs or symptoms. But state officials insisted that the risk to the public remains low and that no one else tested positive for influenza. H5N5 is not considered to be more dangerous to human health than the what we've reported on before, H5N1 strain, which had been spreading widely among wild birds, poultry, and other animals. And apparently, this person had poultry in their backyard, and that is what experts or scientists believe had caused this. I know we've only got a few minutes left, and I just want to also bring up something very, very important before we start to close, folks. About this show and why we do it. We're here because we want to do something special. We want to tell the stories of animals and advocate for their welfare and amplify the voices that really make a difference. But we cannot do this on WBAI without you. Because this isn't just a show, it's a community. We're here because we want to inform and inspire and maybe even challenge your perspectives a bit. But most importantly, we're here because we care about you, our listeners, and the impact that we can have together. What do you get when you support us? Well, you keep this show on the air. You allow us to bring you these fascinating and important stories about animals in history, heartwarming rescue efforts. You know I love to do them, and the policy battles that shape their futures. But your support helps us to expand our reach. We love connecting with advocates, with historians, with everyday people who are making a difference for pets and animals in our cities and beyond. We want to keep growing and sharing more stories like this that matter. But here's the deal. We have to raise significant funds to keep bringing you the progressive and independent radio that you love and you count on. We need you. Yes, you, the people who've tuned in, to please step up right now and donate. So pick up your phone and call 1-833-922-4692. 1-833-922-4692. Or you could become a BAI buddy in the name of this show, which is what I really would love. I want to get, and I'll be talking about this in future episodes, I would like to get 5 to 10 BAI buddies in the name of this show by the end of this calendar year. I am a BAI buddy. I did this the moment that I started with WBAI a number of years ago. I set it up online with my credit card. I gave a small contribution every month. At the end of the year, I give a little more to balance it out. But most people give $10 or $15 per month. Every little bit will count. You can make a one-time donation, or you could become a BAI buddy. So you can go to buddy.wbai.org, buddy.wbai.org, or you can call 1-833-922-4692. And you can also do it the old school way, which I often still do. I write those paper checks, folks. So you can mail a check. Make sure to make it out to Pacifica-WBAI and mail it to the studio at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, 11217. So take a moment. Go ahead, give today at buddy.wbai.org or call 1-833-922-4692. Think of how proud your canine or your cat companions will be of you.
And thanks for tuning in to Animal Matters. And thank you again to Daniel Clement for joining us today. We are excited to bring you this show and the stories that matter, not just about pets, but about the role animals are playing in all of our lives, our communities, and even our policies. And we want to hear from you. Like Jeff just said a couple of minutes ago, your stories, your thoughts, your experiences. This is a conversation and you're a big part of it. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter.
Did I just lose you, Erin? Are you still there? Oh, I thought I lost you there. I thought I lost you there.
I am still here, Jeff.
Oh, it got so quiet for a moment there, folks. In addition to Twitter, on Instagram and Facebook, folks, I'm going to be back this Thursday with another episode of City Watch. That's at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Thursday. Instead of politics, I'm going to focus on food insecurity because this is a day when many of us get together with friends and family. And much of the day is centered around a holiday dinner. So I thought in the spirit of the season, I'd highlight the work of three organizations that have stepped up to address food insecurity. I'm going to be joined by Encore Community Services, JASA, and also the AKC Museum of the Dog. Yes, they too have stepped up at this time, and I'm going to explain how this Thursday at 5 o'clock. And then next week, please tune in at this time for another episode of Animal Matters. I'm going to take a look at how social media influences pet adoptions and fosters. So if you're an animal lover or like me, then you likely are moved by those wonderful images. I go down a rabbit hole so often watching videos and photos of animals and pets, and I wondered how influential these tactics are. Does the photo of an adorable dog in a shelter motivate you to adopt or foster? I'll be joined by two guests. One, an author of a study that examined the impact of Facebook, and the other, a Tampa-based photographer whose images, whose photos and videos are so exceptional. He just did a really adorable one a few days ago about Dot the bunny and her siblings. And he's going to share how to take the perfect shot, something we can all learn from. Erin, I want to thank you again for being with us today. You're definitely going to be back. And I want to thank Peggy for, well, being suspiciously quiet this morning, Erin.
I mean, I think that our voices have lulled her to sleep because my girl is over here snoring. I'm surprised that folks can't hear her. But thank you, Jeff. It has been a pleasure. And thank you, everybody, for welcoming me. Peggy and I will definitely be back. We're happy to be here and talk to you about all of this. But we are going to go and get our day started. As I told you, walk on over to the farmer's market and pick up the ingredients for Peggy's stew. And everyone, enjoy your day.
Good morning. You're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. Animal Matters came to you live over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up at 10 o'clock is Caribbean Voices and Beyond with Isaac Ferguson. So please, stay tuned.
I'm Jeff Simmons, the co-host of City Watch, for Thursday afternoons at 5 o'clock. From the corridors of power to the streets where you live, we've got you covered. So join us as we join the drive time lineup on weekdays when WBAI brings you the latest scoop on politics and policy. You name the topic, we're dissecting it. And here's the best part, your voice matters. So we want to hear from you each week. Tune in to WBAI 99.5 FM on Mondays through Fridays at 5 o'clock for your daily dose of politics and policy. And don't miss out on the conversation on City Watch every Thursday, where politics meets the pavement, only on WBAI.
The 33rd African Diaspora International Film Festival returns to New York City November 28th through December 14th. Experience more than 80 films from Africa, the Caribbean, Latin America, and beyond, including The Dutchman, Sugar Island, and Fanon. Join filmmakers, panels, and special events at Teachers College, Columbia University, and Cinema Village. Get your all-access pass, fun pass, or individual tickets at nyadiff.org and experience the rainbow of human stories on screen.
This is Lawrence Ham, chairman of the People's Organization for Progress. I invite you to join the Free Mumia Movement and allies on our long walk for justice for Mumia Abu-Jamal and for the dignity and medical needs of the incarcerated. We are walking 103 miles from Germantown, Philadelphia to the State Correctional Institution in Frackville, starting November 28th and arriving 12 days later at SCI Mahanoy. We demand an end to elder abuse, an end to systematic medical neglect, freedom for all political prisoners, and we march to demand freedom for Mumia Abu-Jamal now. Go to marchformumia.org for details. Again, that's marchformumia.org.
With love, not fear.
This is Stephanie Wells, Executive Director of Pacifica Foundation. Congress has defunded public media, threatening the survival of television and radio stations that provide trusted news, emergency alerts, and vital community connection. Years of corporate media consolidation and deregulation have taken media out of community hands. while social media platforms cut back on fact-checking, leaving communities vulnerable to misinformation. In this time of social crisis,